Alex, we got Jason on the line. What do you want to ask him?
With somebody that's kind of starting off taking action, what would you say is the number one thing to focus on that would make the biggest impact to kind of continue with this momentum?
Consistency, right? You're going out there to do a lot of things. You've been at a lot of events right there, but usually people, especially someone in their W-2, right, is trying to find that 3, 6, 7 hour window where they're going to get all this done. It just never comes, right? Then you're like, I'll get to it next week. But if you could go in there today and said, for every day for the rest of the year, not including weekends, I put 15 minutes in. Think about how much you'll accomplish in the course of it. Think about a whole year. Say it's 250 days that are just working days, right? And you just went in there and did 15 minutes a day. Think about how much further you'd be ahead instead of just waiting for that 3, 5, 7 hour window. Because when you do that, you start creating consistency, repetition, and discipline, which is most important, right? Because the discipline to getting up there, especially breaking your habits, because right now, I'm sure you have habits, we all do, right? But the habits are more aligned with what you're doing with your job. So to break those habits, you have to create something that becomes that point of position to get you there.
This is the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast, and I'm your host, Brian Briscoe. And this podcast is designed for the aspiring apartment investor and literally gives them the opportunity to ask the questions that will help them get to the next level. So if you're an aspiring apartment investor, this podcast is for you. Now, this podcast is brought to you by the Tribe of Titans Multifamily Educational Community. It's your one-stop shop for learning how to succeed at apartment investing. Welcome to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast. I'm your host, Brian Briscoe with Streamline Capital Group. We got a really good show lined up for everybody today. We got our second time guest here. You got Jason Yerusi, and we also have first time guest in our aspiring investor spot, Alex Chan. So guys, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Awesome. All right. Well, Jason, you're going to be up first today. So let's talk a little bit about you. Do us a favor. Tell us about yourself.
Sure. Jason Yerusi of Yerusi Holdings. I'm down here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Grew up, born and raised in New Jersey. Lived there most of my life before living in New York City, and started to really in the restaurant business. I went out there and opened up some restaurants, worked at some really busy bars and restaurants, opened and sold a brewery. And then right in early 2010, going into 2011, Hurricane Sandy happened, right? Decimated the East Coast. And my father had this very niche construction business focused on lifting and moving houses. And overnight, his business went from doing 10, 11, 12 projects a year to 1,000 calls a day for the next months and months.
Lifting and moving houses.
Correct. Correct. Okay. And so you think about that is that, you know, you do it. Sometimes the foundation's bad. Sometimes you have setback issues. Sometimes someone wants to move a house away from the street or flooding, right? So houses would be in, you know, areas by rivers or by lakes or by the ocean, and the homes would get flooded, right? And so a lot of FEMA mandated rules came down the pike and houses needed to be lifted. So my brother, who was working for me at the time, and Peely, who has been on the show before, but now my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, we moved out to New Jersey to help dad with the family business. So we took that business from, you know, 10, 12 projects a year. We were doing somewhere between 250, 300 projects a year for the course of, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, all the way until just getting my dad retired, really in the last, we'll say 12 months, but really about 24, right? That said, you know, I've constantly been in businesses where it was me having to do activity to create an outcome. Now, not to say that I'm anything from hard work. I like it. I like working. Like, that's what I do. But I constantly had to find an avenue that I could create a life where I could step out and do what I want, right? So today, this morning, my kids were on a field trip. I went to the field trip. I was there at the apple orchard with them, right? While the business is still working. And what I found is I was constantly in businesses where the construction business was so critical that every point it had to be my brother, my father, and myself involved with the business, because the nature of a house, someone's largest possession, being damaged or potentially hurting someone was too much on the line for us not to be involved. So we constantly could not pull ourselves out of the business. So I kept asking that question, along with Peely, what else could we do? And it led us into real estate, right? So we did what we thought was logical. Peely went out there and got a real estate license. And I and her, we started flipping homes, right? We started doing these very elaborate flips. But again, we're doing this in New Jersey. Why still run the construction company? And so we were building busy on top of busy, right? I still had a restaurant in New York City, had just sold the brewery. So I had all these activities going on. And what we found is that although we were doing good in a few things, just weren't really doing great, because the time that I wanted to get back at this time, Peely's pregnant with her first kid, was slowly slipping away. We were actually getting less time. So Peely met someone just at an event who was doing out-of-state rentals. And that seemed very interesting to us because we had spent a lot of time putting together teams in the restaurant world and the brewery world and the bar world. And so we ended up buying some rentals out-of-state. Now, instead of buying single families like this person was doing, we started buying two families and three families and four families. And that was our first introduction to economies of scale. Yeah. And so what happened is that I couldn't be in a position where I could run out and go down there and fix the problem or run to Home Depot, right? Because we're 1,000 miles away. And that was that first aha moment, like, oh, this is something. However, it wasn't scalable. We were starting to have checks show up without our action, but it wasn't scalable to a point that we could really do it. So asking the question, we came upon people buying apartment communities. And that was that next step in the evolution where we sold off all those smaller properties. We stopped flipping homes and we started taking ourselves away from the construction business. Back in 2015, 2016, went all in with multifamily, brought our first 94 unit. That was in May of 2017. That was in Louisville, Kentucky. Brought a couple, maybe 400 or 500 units there before transitioning to other markets. And now we've done somewhere about maybe 27, 28 transactions across 7 states. We've had 14 full cycle deals. So it leads us somewhere about coming up about 3,000 units that we've purchased over the course of 2017 through today.
Nice, nice. Good numbers. And I mean, you're in Tennessee right now. Is that where you guys are focusing for your acquisitions?
You know, I like this market a lot, but I'm very market specific. So although we're in Tennessee, I don't go to Knoxville. I don't go to Memphis. I don't go to Clarksville. I don't go to Chattanooga. I solely do Nashville around the MSA, really highly focused around South Nashville all the way through Murfreesboro.
Nice. I like that approach. You know, that's kind of a similar approach we're taking. It didn't start out that way for me. I mean, I started out all over the map. Then I started realizing that, you know, focusing on one metro, one area and having your, you know, a really small box that you operate in actually does better for you long run. But anyway.
Easier. It's easier to find opportunity. And the rebuttal will be, well, there's going to be less opportunity. There's going to be, well, there's going to be less noise for which you have to dive through, for which you won't fully be able to discover what's the right opportunity for you. Because I could, you know, we'll have people in our mastermind be like, well, I got 150 deals in 17 states. And I'm like, by the time you figure out where you are in any of these and what could potentially be the good one, someone else who was highly focused on that area has already sized that deal up and taken that deal down if it was a deal.
Yeah. The guys who are focused, they know a good deal when they see it and they're able to act a lot quicker. And I think the way I look at it is you got a much higher probability on the good deals if you're focused on one area. So you may see fewer deals, but your probability of getting the deals is much higher because you've built relationships. Anyway, I think there's a lot of good reasons for focusing. So, well, awesome. So Nashville, what do you like about Nashville?
You know, Nashville is a very interesting market because although nothing's fully insulated, there's so much happening here and so much driving demand and so many people coming here and so much diversity in jobs that it's creating a lot of opportunity and you're continuing to see the housing strain, right? So you have so many single family homes coming, just even the run up in valuations since the time we've come here has put a big strain on people trying to get into their first home, right? And so that pushes a lot more people into rentals. We've seen the rental rates continue to increase. Now, there's certain parts of Nashville, there's about 25,000 units coming online in select parts of Nashville, which is going to put a lot of downward pressure on the A market, but we're predominantly in the B and C market where we aren't exposed to a lot of that runoff. We have one property that has one new construction going on around the corner from it. However, you know, their studios are about $3,000, right? And our highest price two bedroom is $1,799. So if you look at that here, we're an affordable option, although we're a good product, affordable option as a good secondary option for people that don't want to walk in and have a 300-foot studio for $3,000.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. And I mean, you mentioned like a lot of units coming online and I mean, you seem to be a little bit insulated from that, but I think that's a trend nationwide. You know, I've seen it. We're focusing on Salt Lake City. I think they're going to have record deliveries this year. But, you know, with interest rates where they are, that trend's going to be opposite 2 to 3 years from now. So
it's exactly right. This is the first year since 2007 that we should be over the unit supply than demand. Yeah. And then we're going to trickle and flip flop right back. But we're still, if you look at a course of it, we need like 16 million units and over the decade, and we're going to build like 11, right? So even in that part, we hit this, we're just like you said, high interest rates, labor constraint, supply constraint, every other point, and just regulatory. That's the one biggest piece too. Like even if we want to build this today and we take everything out of the way, it's not like the government just opens up permits in every town and just says, here you go. Yeah. Right. And so there's a lot of pushback in terms of rezoning and all these other things, especially when you see places like, oh, well, let's do office conversion. Like, yeah, that could be a possibility if the market allows it, right? If the city allows it, if the state allows it, like if that's what they want to happen in their city.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Awesome. Well, cool. Well, since we're talking about, you know, the market you're investing in, let's dial into to one specific property. Can you tell us about one of the deals you've done? And sure. I'm gonna pick your first, pick your favorite, doesn't matter. Just let's go into a little bit of detail.
Yeah, we just did a refinance on a 93 unit. I brought it for $8.9 million. Actually had the seller hold a note for $6.1 million. He was the builder of the property, which back in 1971. So he had built the property. Okay. Almost, he had like a very small base. He had like $800,000 of a note left on it. So we gave him a down payment. I paid it off. He held the note. It was 4 years interest only with a 15-year term after that. Fixed out. So it was a really nice part. The property was, you know, with having such low debt on it, right? He was running it in a very interesting way. He had about half the building that was on market rate, you know, year lease tenants. And he had the other half of the building that was on weekly rentals where they were furnishing out at the property. So he's running two books and his books were pretty chaotic. So we went in there, we had a ton of opportunity just to control the building and take over and really look at what he was doing that didn't serve the market. So some instances he was paying electric, all the other surrounding comps, tenants pay electric. He was paying the cable and the internet for the property. So we were able to go and push that back, right? So over the course of 2020, we brought this into 2020, right? We had 93 units. The first year we turned about 89 of them. So we turned over the entire building. Our effective rent at the time, I think was like 570.
So you did 89 out of 93 in a year.
We were thinking about doing half of it when we got into it. There was really no way because we were the bad building on the block, which is a great position to be because we had to go there. It was the place where if you didn't have good credit, you didn't have any credit, you had a criminal record, you could come here and get a home, right? Yeah. So we had to change the narrative and it wasn't easy where we could slowly put our toe in the water. It was just jumping into the cold lake, right? Yeah. So we did about 89 of them. Effective rent from about 590 all the way up to about 900 to start. Got this over to the table where rents today are about 1100. We have three different floors. The first floor we do about 1100 and then it's about $20 less for each of the higher floors because it's walk up. But transition that building for A1, it praised out about I think $15 million on the building right there, which is a really nice day. You're able to go and do a cash out refi, get investors. Oh, yeah. So just a good property that people were like, man, has such a bad reputation. So we had to go change the name, change the dynamics, even change the reviews. And it took months to stop getting the calls about like someone wanted to come in there because they have no credit, no history, no anything. But it finally got it over the edge. Right. So now it's got a great place. We're seeing a bunch of traffic that we really are. Our excess marketing is even needed because now we have such a good flow with the unit itself.
Yeah. I love the idea of cash out refis. What's your intended hold period? How long do you guys plan on owning that one?
Now we're another 7 years would be on the docket. Yeah. So, you know, it really comes down to your partners, the members and how the deal is broken up. Most of ours are about 5 to 7 year hold, but because we're able to cash this out, we've taken it out and got investors their capital back. So it was cash flowing really good. Yep. And now it's going to reduce our cash flow out of the gate for a little bit, going to about 9 months. And then we'll start jumping back up into a cash flow position again.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. I like that, that pattern. I like the refinance and the cash out, returning as much of investor capital as you can. I like that model myself. That's typically what we're doing as well. So it's fun to hear, you know, people that aren't doing that 3 to 5 year hold. And I know a lot of people do, there's nothing wrong with it, but, sometimes I think I'm the odd man out, but.
We have some products like that too. It just goes down to the product. And like, if you want to hold it for, you know, if you want to, like, there's some product that you are like, okay, this is, you know, 3 to 5 year old, right? And then this is be time to move it.
Yep. Some products are, when you look at the business plan, you look at where it's located, everything else, the 3 to 5 year hold or the quick flip makes a little more sense with different products. So, all right. So let's jump into your why. And you've kind of woven around this a little bit with time and everything else, but you know, what is your why?
You know, to put it in a why, I just continue to create value in myself, continue to push myself outside my comfort zone and just set good standards, good expectations for my kids, right? Because, I mean, I'm going to die, right? And when I die, right, you know, that's, you know, people that were really famous 1,000 years ago aren't mentioned again. So to think about that, you know, I'm going to be thought of for years after my death and celebrated on some pedestal is not the goal. It's that I'm going to pass on good values to my kids and my legacy, if you will call it, will be passed along through my kids. in the way that they act, they grow up, and they treat others. And then that's going to turn down to their families that go from there.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. All right, last question, and then we'll bring Alex in. What's next for you?
Oh, man. We just closed on the self-storage facility here in East Nashville. So that's been a good property to bring that on. We have a couple that we manage in-house here. So we've been looking at doing some good movement with them right there. We have another 165 units that are under, we're under LOI, but we'll go to PSA this week that are here locally as well.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. All right. That said, Alex, how's it going, man?
Pretty good. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, pleasure to meet you, Jason.
Same here.
Yeah. Should have had you on a long time ago, but glad we finally connected and got you on. So do us a favor. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. No, things are happening for a reason, right? I meant to be here interviewing with Jason.
Awesome. Good. Perfect.
Yeah. So my name is Alex Chen, and I've started investing in multifamily about 2 years ago. And kind of what drove me to there is just at that point in my career, I was pretty miserable, strictly because, you know, through a reorg and just my manager and I, we just have different philosophy. So up until that point, I've been pretty lucky to have good leaders that kind of supported me. So I was in my comfort zone, right? So the minute I was outside my comfort zone, after a year of that, I was struggling mentally, just having a hard time even making decisions because I was constantly being second guessed. So after that, you know, just had to start thinking outside the box. And then something that I've always wanted to do is real estate. So I took action, went to a conference, starting to research what opportunities out there. And I hired my first mentor. So that one was just kind of give me an overview of all things real estate, from, you know, fix and flip all the way to syndication.
And now, was that first conference, was that the one we met at, or was that a different one?
It's probably a different one. The first one I went to was in Dallas.
Okay. Yeah. We met in...
I think it was in Phoenix as well.
Phoenix. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yeah. I remember now. I remember. Got it. On the same page.
Yep.
May-ish. Okay. Got it. So Dallas. Anyway, go from there.
Yeah. So anyways, hired my first mentor. They hit on syndication, which is something I've never heard of. So it piqued my interest. She started explaining the ins and outs of it. And the model is very similar to my day job, which is operations leadership. So my skill set is definitely managing a budget, vendor management, working with people. So when it kind of talked about the different roles and responsibility within the team, like I could resonate with an asset manager. So started kind of explore what that looks like. I invested my first limited partnership, about 2 years ago now. Really excited for the opportunities. And then as I got deeper and going to conferences and having opportunity to meet folks like yourself, I love the community. So that kind of got me to the next phase, which is like, I want to be able to do this when I, you know, retire from my W-2 or be W-2 optional. Yeah. Want to be surrounded by like-minded people. And overall, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So one thing that that I love asking everybody and, you know, go a little bit deeper is about your why you're doing all of that. So what is your big burning why?
Yeah, definitely my family. So, you know, I think both of you guys have children. So when you have children, and my daughter's 9 right now, time just seems like it just flies by, right? I can still remember when she's a baby. And then at that time, I'm like, oh, yep, I'm going to be doing this, this, and this. And then all of a sudden, 9 years later, I just feel like my life hasn't changed as much as I would like to. So that's why in the last 2 years, really focus on doing something different, taking action, and then focusing on my goals. Nice. And then the other part, my aging parents, right? So flip side of having children, your kids, your parents are also aging, and I could see them deteriorating a little bit. I want to make sure when they are needed, I'm there to support them and take care of them, you know, without having to go, oh, I need to find time for my job to do such thing, right? Both financially and, you know, with time.
Yeah. And the aging parents, you know, is something that is getting to be more and more of a conversation in our house. You know, I'm mid 40s and my parents, my wife's parents are both mid 70s. So it's kind of, I get it. And kids, a lot of people have the why of the kids. But I think you hit the nail on the head. The aging parents thing comes into play soon too. So that said, Alex, we got Jason on the line. What do you want to ask him?
So Jason, once I saw who I was going to be meeting with, I went to see a podcast and, you know, I really enjoyed the, you know, Live 100 podcast. They're pretty short, motivational, but, you know, effective, right? I mean, just in the short time I was catching up, like it really made me think of like, wow, I feel like I'm taking actions, but there's just things that I have probably still need to question myself and answer a little bit more and dive a little deeper. With that said, you know, so with somebody that's kind of starting off taking action, what would you say is the number one thing to focus on that would make the biggest impact to kind of continue with this momentum?
Consistency. It's simply that, right? You're going out there to do a lot of things. You've been at a lot of events right there, but usually people, especially someone in their W-2, right, is trying to find that 3, 6, 7 hour window where they're going to get all this done. It just never comes, right? Then you're like, I'll get to it next week. But if you could go in there today and said for every day for the rest of the year, not including weekends, I put 15 minutes in every day. That's it. 15 minutes, put the clock on 15 minutes. Think about how much you'll accomplish in the course of it. Think about a whole year. Say it's 250 days that are just working days, right? And you just went in there and did 15 minutes a day. Think about how much further you'd be ahead instead of just waiting for that 3, 5, 7 hour window. Because when you do that, you start creating consistency, repetition, and discipline, which is most important, right? Because the discipline to getting up there, especially breaking your habits, because right now, I'm sure you have habits, we all do, right? But the habits are more aligned with what you're doing with your job. So to break those habits, you have to create something that becomes that point of position to get you there, right? Because you could, you know, stay with your job and go and crush this, or you could leave your job and go and crush this, right? There's no right way. There's only your way. So if you start taking small, dedicated action each and every day, you're going to find you could, by just the course of 30 days, you're going to be light years from where you are today just because of that 15 minutes that you did there. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, but you think about 15 minutes. You can get a ton done in 15 minutes.
Yeah. 2 hours a week, 100 hours. I mean, that's like a couple work weeks a year if you really put it together. I'll piggyback off of that. You know, I mean, the consistency is absolutely important. I mean, but one thing that I'll add is the doing the right things as well. So one thing that we do is we look at our long term. We begin with the end in mind, kind of a Stephen Covey thing. But we break things down. We have our 10-year targets, and then we break things down into a three-year picture, and then our 1-year goals. And then from there, we look at quarterly. We call them rocks. We do our quarterly rocks, and those are the things we focus on. All right. I mean, there's a lot of things that have to happen for us to get to our goals. But every quarter, we pick 3 or 4 rocks that we are going to focus on. And so when you're doing that consistent action, when you're taking that 15 minutes a day to do things, you know, I would say, you know, work towards one of those rocks, work towards one of those big ticket items that's going to be most influential in getting you to where you want to go.
Oh, thank you for that. Yeah. And with like kind of going along with that, the specific rock, was there one of those rock that was like resetting my morning? I think Jason, you mentioned, yeah. Or is it like, you know, educating on underwriting? Like what has been the more successful or like has produced the biggest yield if it was one of those rocks?
When you're getting started, there's so many things to look at and can be overwhelming. Right. So the rocks are really good to position yourself, especially as you start taking action to know where you're going to go. But on the starting point, you're like, well, where do I start? Right. Yeah. And so the piece of that is it's simple. What do you like doing? What don't you like doing? Right. And so what you like doing, spending energy on focusing on them. So it could be underwriting. It could be talking with brokers, could be talking with people, could be potential investors. Maybe you don't like the asset management. Maybe you don't like the property walks. Maybe you don't like talking to brokers. Well, fine. You may have to align with another partner. But if you do those, you'll find that's going to warrant you to get good questions, will get you to better answers. It's typically not. So to say like starting out, what were my rocks? My rocks are just like, I want to buy an apartment building, right? Like I didn't know what a rock was in that part or the goal was because I just didn't know, right? So you don't know the steps, but what the action does, it's so important, is that it does two things. Either you quickly realize you're going the wrong way and then you stop and you turn around, or you get a better question, which leads you to the answer. Because typically it's not that you don't, you're like you're searching for the answer, but you don't know the question to ask to get to the answer. When I learned the question to ask, then I identified the first question. So if you like underwriting, go find properties that are in your market, any market. Start going there, diving through them and looking at anomalies from one to the next. And when you start diving in through anomalies there, you can look at one to the next. Then you can get OMs, which are basically the memorandum coming over from the broker, which explains the properties. You can start looking at how they're breaking out and how these properties are presented, but it's going to help you look at your analysis. Mm-hmm. And if you do that enough, you're going to start seeing deltas between properties for where either there's a common theme that brokers are trying to pitch, Or there's some correlation where you see a number of these properties and you see this other property that's being presented that has a bunch of these missing pieces that you could implement effectively as part of your underwriting, your analysis to get the desired result.
We talked earlier about focusing on a market. And I think the first time where it really dawned on me that, you know, the value of that is when I started diving into properties in the same area, the first metric that really kind of clicked in my head, strangely enough, was water bills. You know, I was dealing in apartments in an area where everything was, you know, central build. So only one water meter on a property. And I started realizing that, you know, if we dialed things down into, you know, per unit per month, everything was like right around the same. So it's one of those things like Jason was saying, just giving a specific example is when I started underwriting things, I noticed, okay, where is the water bill? Okay, if the water bill is above $40 per unit per month, there's probably, you know, some overusage, some leaks or something else there. But the more specific and focused you get, the more you'll be able to, you know, see stuff like that occur. And it's not just going to be in the water line. It's going to be on every line of that spreadsheet. So when you start looking at properties, you know what to expect. You know what the market averages are, and you know where you could potentially come in and add value by either trimming expenses or raising revenues.
Got it. Thank you for that. You know, the next question is kind of along the same mindset. So that's a powerful thing, right? It's either going to break you or it's going to lift you up and get you to the next level. So with all the success the two of you have accomplished, do you still have moments of limiting beliefs, doubts? And if so, like, what are the tools to kind of get you to reset and go, yep, I need to just pursue and move on?
You know, if anybody says that they don't have things that hold them back, they're going to find, right? You all do, right? And it's just simple. And because you're constantly going to levels. And if you're not going to levels, you're not pushing yourself. Or people get stuck and they feel comfortable in life is because even if they don't like the position that they're in is more comfortable than potentially trying something that could be potentially massively great for them. But the fear of that holds them to where they are. Right. So creating a discipline in your schedule and your routine gets you out of your effect. Right. So if you know you're going to do your 15 minutes every day, right, that's just part of your schedule. Then it doesn't matter how you're feeling. You just do it. Right. When I do say that I get up early and I work out every day, no matter how I feel, I just do it. Right. So now I'm on repetition that this is what I do. And it's the same thing with your business is that when you push through it, right, you have mindset, skill set, and discipline. Right. You can have one, two, but you have to have three. Right. Because you got to have the mindset. You got to overcome that each day. You got the skill set to start working through it, and you have the discipline to do it. Because you have the mindset and the skill set, right? Great. But you're not disciplined, so you're just not getting things done. So regardless of what you feel today, you just have to say, I'm doing this for a higher purpose and take it outside of you. If you're doing this for your family and your parents, then you have to stop looking at, oh, woe is me. I can't do this because of me. Well, I'm doing this for other people, so I have no choice, but I have to do this. And when you get yourself put in that position here, there's no other choice.
Yeah.
There's simply no other choice. The only choice is that you're going to show up and be disciplined in what you said you're going to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I'll go back. I mean, I love that answer. I think discipline, you know, I've got a book by Jocko Willink on my desk and he says the same thing. You know, it's not motivation, it's discipline that gets you through it. And I've got that book on my desk. That's something that I struggle with. But, you know, when you talk about feelings of inadequacy, when you talk about, you know, every day is the answer. Okay. Every single day I have something crossing through my mind, you know, am I going to be able to do this? I mean, we're in the middle of a $5 million capital raise right now, you know, and, you know, there's one time a day, you know, more than one time a day where I sit and I look at that number and think, you know, can we do this? You know, can we hit that number? You know, so every single day I have it. And that's part of the reason why we have rocks is because that's what we focus on. Okay. Instead of looking at the big overwhelming picture, and there's a lot of stuff to do, you know, we focus on the rocks and I can go back to my rocks and say, all right, if I'm doing these things, getting these things done, that's going to get me to where I want to get a year, 3 years or 10 years from now. Right. So, but I think Jason's answer is much better. So, you know, when you re-listen to this, rewind it, listen to him. And then, you know, anyway, there you go.
No, both are awesome answers. Yeah. You know, this is more on the investor side. So, you know, I've heard success, you know, through folks that are getting to the first deal through a co-GP with a experience syndicator. And then there are folks who are, you know, start small and do a joint venture and learn the ins and outs of 10 to 30 units. Like, what is your thoughts on that? Like, as a first-time investor, is one a better approach versus the other, or is it just depends on different factors?
There's not a better approach, right? I would say this, like if you want to learn to swim, you're not going to go ride a bike first, right? So if you want to buy a 100 unit apartment, you're not going to go buy a 12 unit just because it's a whole different business philosophy and a business plan, right? Well, even though it's the same steps to do both, there are just more numbers in between. Now, out of the gate, you know, we did those 1, 2, and 3 units, but we just didn't know the exposure to the larger buildings, but then we just jumped into the 94 unit, right? And so it was me and Peely, we just did it ourselves. We put together the team, we did the process, we raised the capital. Now, the question goes is that, well, you know, you had no experience doing this, so how'd you do it, right? But I did have experience doing a lot of other things just like you do, right? You come from, you know, it sounds like a great job where you've been highly successful in the job. You've done a lot with it, and that's what you have to lead off of, right? So I didn't have the backdrop going to buy apartment buildings, but I did have the backdrop of going out there and massively scaling construction business, you know, opening and selling businesses, going and scaling in one of the biggest New York City outdoor bars, right? I had a lot of different backgrounds that people knew me from. And so they knew that when I said I was going to do something, I would show up and do it, right? And that's the discipline of the approach. And then doing this before I had the opportunity, I went out to investors who were my network, right? Who were people that knew me and knew my background and just said, here's what I'm looking to do and why. And here is why this could be a benefit to you. And then I handed them a simple one page and just said, here, take a look. And if you're interested, you know, let me know if you'd be in for 50,000 or 25,000 or 100,000. And what I was able to do was get the questions, just the uncertainty, because you said you had never heard of syndication. Most of my network hadn't either. So I would go to them, explain to them, allow them to get comfortable with it. But at the same time, I was getting soft commits of a number of money. So we got soft commits up to $1 million. So when we had to raise that first $700,000, we did it in a day, realistically, because we had already done the pre-work. So we just went back to the network and said, hey, remember that deal that we told you we're going to buy? We're going to buy that Avatar deal, right? That 75 to 100 unit. Well, here it is. It's right here. And so we already had the investors ready because they had gotten the questions out of the way about me, why I'm doing this, what the process is, why we like this, and how we were going to operate this 1,000 miles away. So they were ready to commit. So the answer is that there is no wrong answer. It's just pick an answer and go. Because when you start, whether it be with a 30-unit, 50-unit, 100-unit, 200-unit, you're going to find the steps to do. But usually when you're trying to do all the steps at the same time, you're wasting a lot of time, but you're also doing too much work in all these different departments. Because if you're doing a 30-unit, 100-unit, you need different teams, right? It's going to be different brokers, maybe different banks. It's going to be different property management types. So you need to learn all these phases, like the talk track, how to expose yourself to all the people, the right questions to ask multiple times instead of just honing down into your goal, into your niche of where you want to go.
Yeah.
Got it.
Love it. Love it. Great answer. You know, what I'll add is, you know, if you could do one thing, you know, and great, like I said, great answer, you know, begin with the end in mind. You know, there's a lot of value. I think getting into a deal up front is more important than not, you know, so you should do everything you can to be able to get into the deal, get the experience and start your track record, start the momentum. But if you could begin with the end in mind first and say, hey, this is where I want to get 3 to 5 years from now, there might be a better avenue for you to get into a deal than another, right? So if you want to be a fund manager and you're going to be raising capital for deals, you know, there's a different approach you might want to take. But end of the day, you know, I think if I could sum up what Jason said in one word or a couple of words, it'd be the Nike slogan. You just do it, you know, just get in and do it. So,
yeah. This one's more local vendor related stuff. So with like insurance, you know, it's been a big topic that I hear everybody's like things are dropping. My wife's an insurance broker in California, and then a lot of property they're just dropping and not insuring because of the age. How are you handling, you know, or navigating that? Are you just not looking at those one? Do you think the future of what we're heading to, that these 60s, 70s unit is going to be obsolete and that we shouldn't even touch them, especially for a new investor?
Well, there's always going to be a market out there, right? And it just goes to the insurance market has been exposed in a lot of ways. There's been so many natural disasters that has created so many claims that they have so much to pay off. You can even look at what we were just talking about with Hurricane Sandy and just the flooding, right? So you're seeing premiums rise 10, 20, 30%, right? It's just not uncanny to see that. And you're seeing a lot of people because a lot of insurance guys are pulling out of markets because they have a lot of exposure in a certain market. Now, what that does, it puts downward pressure on the other carriers because now they have to pick up the slack and that's where the premiums are rising up. So to say going away from them, there's in many markets, there's so much product that's at 60s, 70s, and 80s. It's still going to be a viable product. But you have to look at it just for your own case. you know, 7 years from now, it's going to be 2030. So if you look at a 1970 building, it's going to be 60 years old. So you have to think about the run rate. Are you, how many times have you changed the roof, right? What's the mechanicals, right? What are all these components, right? So you may be doing a lot of heavy lifting just to get that building up to par. Now, I still have some older assets myself, right? We still have some of that parts we're seeing in rising insurance rates, and you're seeing rising in many things, but insurance, just like you see with interest rates, they rise and fall. So the market's coming really hard in right now with the insurance market. Will it level off? It will level off. It will go down. When that's going to happen, I don't know. But you constantly see these ebbs and flows of how these markets work. So you just have to take, for instance, is that it's not an all set or done. There's still going to be a massive business plan to do that repositioning play with those types of buildings. But you have to take into account the highest insurance rates and what are some of the other major components, right? The windows, the roofs, the parking lots, the mechanicals, right? Those are all going to play not only to the functionality of your building, but your overall insurance costs as well.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of insurance specifically, you know, we've closed, I think, four deals so far this year. Two out of the four have been delayed because of insurance, you know, and it's, you know, part of it is in the case that you mentioned, that you cited, there's a lot of insurance companies that are shying away from the 60s and 70s vintage. But like Jason said, you know, if some companies are going away from it, you know, it's capitalism. There's going to be somebody else that jumps in and fills that gap. So, you know, we've had to spend a little bit more time on insurance. We've had to do a lot more shopping. And I think the insurance brokers are, you know, having to work a lot harder for the money that they do earn. And at the end of the day, we're usually able to get a policy that works. And, you know, I think the biggest part right now is trying to get the lenders and the insurance companies together to make sure that, you know, the lenders covered as much as they want. But that's been the gap that we've had recently, is lenders aren't willing to lend to the insurance companies aren't willing to insure to lending standards. And we've had to kind of try to close that gap between lenders and insurance companies recently and try to figure out a way to, hey, if can you give a little bit on this one and whatnot. So it is a difficult time for insurance right now. I don't think overall, I'd say that's one of many things that should be on your plate when you determine where to invest, what vintage to invest, what asset class, and everything else. There's a lot of other factors. I wouldn't let one single factor tell you yes or no.
What do you guys look for in partnership, especially for like new investor? We're always told, you know, go in with somebody that experience. How can I add value, or to show that I can add value to somebody that's experienced? Like, that's been a difficult conversation to, like, I don't know how to navigate to be able to say, hey, I can do this, and here's, you know, how I can add value to you.
Yeah. So you want to get back to, what are your goals, right? What do you want to do? You want to hold these buildings for just, you know, a short time, 12 months, do a quick flip and just make some cash, or you want to hold these for, you know, forever, right? These are whoever buildings, because you have to align your goals with who you're going to invest with, right? Because if you don't have this similar mindset of where the business plan is going to go, it's going to be conflict from the start, right? Because you're making decisions that are contrary to what the other person's deciding to do based on just simple business plans. And then what are your roles and their roles, right? Where can you add value? Because many times people that are friends will become partners, and they're both good at lead generation, or they're both good at marketing, right? But because their friends are just constantly like the same person, so they're just not able to provide the competency of just the various roles that need to be done. Because if you have to have lead generation, due diligence, underwriting, asset management, capital raising, you know, loan sponsor, right? If you can't provide some of those roles, then you're not going to be a good fit for the group, right? So you have to look at, what do they have, where are their strengths, and when can you come in there and take off their plate something that maybe is not their best use case for their time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, specifically, you know, as far as me and partnership, if you want to try to partner with me, there's certain things that, like Jason talked generally, you know, I'm doing a lot of syndications, you know, raising capital is a little bit harder than it was recently. You know, if you're somebody that can raise capital, you know, come talk with me. It's something that we're always looking for, good people who can raise capital. So that's one way to get into it, is, you know, you get really, really good at something that can fill the gap for somebody else. And that's going to get you into a lot of deals. So, all right. Now we are about out of time. So last question. And Jason, you get to go first. How can listeners learn more about you?
Sure. So Alex led in, we're doing a lot over at live-100.com right now. So our Live 100 podcast, we've been putting a lot of energy out there just really just to help others take action, right? Scale up, live their 100, really just maximize their life. If you want to learn more about us in the multifamily side, jerusiholdings.com. You also find more about our mastermind. We have about 75, 80 businesses in there learning to do multifamily just like we do each and every day over at multifamily.com.
All right. And we'll put links in the show notes for all of that stuff. So Alex, same question for you. How can listeners learn more about you?
Yeah, they can find me through alstroventures.com, A-L-S-T-R-O-V-E-N-T-U-R-E-S. Or they could email me at alex@alstroventure.com. And, you know, our goal is really to help others, you know, folks that's like myself in W-2 that doesn't know anything about real estate, to educate, teach them about it, and then hopefully get them on a journey to financial freedom. And then if you're local to Southern California, I host a multifamily master meetup in Orange County. Shoot me an email. I could add you to the list, or you could go to meetup.com and find the Orange County chapter.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And hosting a meetup is a great way to, you know, put yourself in a position where people look at you as an expert, you know, really good resume builder. So good for you for doing that. That's it today. So thanks guys for coming on the show. I very much appreciate your time.
It was a pleasure. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast by the Tribe of Titans. If you're still listening, you obviously liked it. So go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, leave a 5-star rating and review if you haven't already, and then make sure to check out our YouTube channel, which incidentally has a ton of video content that you'll also enjoy and learn from. Now, if you're interested in being on the show, go to our website, diaryofanapartmentinvestor.com, and fill out the questionnaire on the website. And for more educational content and for more information about our educational community, check us out at thetribeoftitans.info.